We've been talking a lot today about building upon the rock, building upon sand. We spoke, we listened earlier to the scriptures from Genesis, where it spoke about building a great city, great tower. So there's a lot of building going on, and it's kind of appropriate that we speak about that this time of year. And even in the situations that many of us are going through right now, it's a bad time in Michigan, so to speak, right? With all the unemployment and all the difficulties that many people are facing. I can't say this from my own experience and from my own self, but I can assure you that if we put into practice a little bit about what God teaches us in the scriptures through these words, what is available for us to hear directly from Him, not even through another person, although that's also available. But if we put into practice a little bit of that, we can see things change. Not just in our own condition, in our own life, but in the lives of others as well. This is what God promises. I cannot promise that to you. And to be honest with you, I feel rather odd standing here telling you about that. Because the first thing that comes to my mind is you're walking out on a limb. You're walking on very thin ice talking about stuff like this. And how dare you do that? Honestly. There's a lot of stuff going on out there beyond our control. And, you know, we really can't predict what the future holds. But let's be honest here. Do we believe in Christ or not? Do we honor the Lord or not? Do we at least seek to? Do we want to believe His words? This is what I face every day when I read things like this, because to be honest with you, I have a lot in common with the builders of the tower. I don't know if you feel that way, but I do. Do you hear God speaking right now? Or do you hear silence? Do you hear me talking? If you hear me talking, I think we're in trouble. And if I don't hear the Lord, I think we're in trouble. The fact is that oftentimes I do feel and hear a lot of silence. And what was I raised to do? To pick up the pieces and go on. Do the best that I can. Get moving. Think about what to do. Do this, do that. Build something. Make it happen. Do you know what the outcome to that is going to be? We have been told here what the outcome will be. It may be surprising. God came down and said, if we don't do something about this, anything will be possible for them. I'm not used to thinking that way, even though I'm used to acting that way. Make it happen. But I know my weaknesses. I know your weaknesses, at least some of you. We know what the outcome will be in the end. Some sort of catastrophe, disaster, calamity, etc. But let's listen carefully to what God says. He does say whatever they put their minds to, they will be able to do. They will be unstoppable. That's odd to me. I don't think of myself that way, although I think of myself as somebody that's got to do stuff. And what is interesting is that ability that we have to be able to do all sorts of amazing things actually comes from God. He gave us that ability. He gave us that capability and He gave us the opportunity. And we run with it. And that's where the problem lies. The building of the tower was not in itself anything bad. It could have been built to the glory of God. It could have been built for the sake of those who built it. The problem with the building of the tower is that people heard silence, and instead of that silence bringing them to their knees and asking the Lord, please reveal yourself. Find a way to open the gates of your kingdom in my heart. The silence that they heard was one that prompted them to move, to get going, to make things happen. And that's where they botched up, because they went their own way. It wasn't just ignorance. It was a willful rejection. If you don't think so, let me suggest this to you. In Matthew, verses 24 to 27, which is the section that we're reading today, to 29, let me read to you these last verses right now. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. Now, one thing that I find interesting about this passage here is that Jesus divides people into two camps: those who hear his word and put it into practice, and those who don't. He doesn't give a third option. That's interesting. I'm used to thinking about the world maybe in three groups: those who hear him, those who don't, and those who are somewhere in the middle. Jesus is saying, actually, that there are those who hear and those who don't. He is saying that he has made it very clear from the beginning. The people in Genesis had opportunity to understand and know. Yeah, it may not be easy. It may require a lot from us. But the fact is that there are only these two groups that Jesus is focusing on right now. We do have ways to hear. He has provided them. The question is, what do we do? What do we do with that? Well, he also says something is going to happen for sure. He repeats it. The rains will come down, the streams will rise, the winds will blow. This is going to happen. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. What will we do then? Will we get on with our lives? Will we get up and continue going? Or are we going to come down on our knees? And are we going to ask him to help us through those hard times? Are we going to ask him to open the gates in our hearts so that his kingdom can pour into us? That is the real key question here. Remember, this passage comes at the end of, at least in Matthew, a very lengthy sermon that involves all sorts of things. If we go back to the beginning in chapter 5, he speaks about the Beatitudes, the blessings. And by the way, it's sort of appropriate to when we're reading this section, to sort of go back and sort of, you know, just glance at what Jesus has said right now, because he uses the word therefore, or another translation, something like it, which means he is now summarizing a conclusion that this ought to end in. So we go back and we see all these blessings. We look at what he says we are to be, salt and light. We see how he speaks of himself as the fulfillment of the law, the purpose behind the law that was given. He speaks about many don'ts. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't divorce. He speaks about oaths. He speaks about the law again, eye for an eye. It is interesting that through this whole process, he is saying things such as, "You have heard it said, but I say unto you." Do you see what's going on here? He is summarizing everything that goes on in the world. He is also summarizing what the law is about. He is summarizing how we are to live and not to live. And on top of it all, he's now pointing to another who says, you know, well, so-and-so commented, and Rabbi such-and-such says this. He actually speaks as one with authority. He is the one who says of tradition, "You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemy and to do good to those," basically, "who seek to destroy you." He's the one who says of the law, "You have heard it said, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, but I say unto you." So think about that. What Jesus is doing right there is he is placing himself in authority over the law. Not to destroy the law, as he says earlier, but to fulfill it. In fulfilling the law, he accomplishes everything there. And then he establishes what the purpose of the law was. He says, "The purpose of the law was for me to show you how to live beyond the law. And you're not going to be able to accomplish anything that is here in the Sermon on the Mount on your own. I guarantee you, it's not going to happen. I think maybe 100 years from now, or sorry, 100 years ago, many people may have been convinced that it would be possible. You know, the social gospel, bringing truth to the world, making things better here on earth, going out and building schools and hospitals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's nothing wrong with that. That is really, really, really good. The problem that happened is that through that process, Genesis 11 happened all over again. You see what's going on? God was ignored. Not everywhere, not in every instance, no, but enough. We as a society ignored God. We as a society rejected God. We kept doing all sorts of great things in his name for a while. Then we stopped and we started doing great things. Well, because it's the right thing to do. And then we started doing great things for ourselves. We built the tower again, folks. And what happened? It came crumbling down again. I don't think that too many people believe in the social gospel anymore. At least probably not in this church. But that doesn't mean that we're off the hook. What is most likely to happen with us here, at least the people that I know, and I'm including myself in this, I don't tend to be of the liberal camp of the church. I tend to be more of the conservative camp of the church. What are we likely to do? We're likely to think, well, what do you expect? That's the way the world is. Sin is entrenched in our hearts, and there is nothing that's going to happen to change that until we hit heaven. And until God brings that day, there's no hope. I'm not saying that we believe that, but I'm saying that oftentimes we live that way. Do you know that we can be Christian and godless at the same time? I know I can, and I am really good at it. We are not going to fix this world, granted. We're not going to stop the drunkard from drinking his wine, granted. We're not going to stop prostitution and abortion, granted. We're not going to stop ignoring our neighbor. I do that very well, and I have reasons to. None of them love God. None of them want to hear about God. And I am very busy, and I don't have time for them. It's very easy to live in a godless way as a God-fearing man. God doesn't like that. It's His universe. So you know what happens when stuff like that occurs? Sooner or later, the rains will come. The floods will rise. The winds will blow. Do you hear silence or do you hear a crash? What's your situation? What is your experience? I have heard a lot of crashing going on. It's easy to think that, well, we have this God who is ruler of the universe, and I have voted for Him, and therefore everything is going to go well from now on. God has different plans. I don't know. I was not in the Garden of Eden. And maybe things could have been different if Adam and Eve had behaved a slightly different way when they were deceived by the serpent. And, you know, I can imagine Adam and Eve going to God and saying, God, the serpent is saying that if we eat from this fruit, we're not going to die. Is that true? I'm kind of puzzled here. That may have been enough to stop the whole thing, but they didn't. And so here we are. Could rains have come down hard, floods have swept away much of the garden before the disobedience occurred? I don't know. Honestly, I wasn't there. I like to think that none of those things would have occurred because there wouldn't be any need for them to happen. But let's face it, we don't live in that world. We live in a world that is vastly different from what God created. And the rains will come. I think that a good number of you are pretty wet from those rains. And I think a good number of you are pretty frazzled from the heavy winds. And you have seen a lot of destruction in your own lives. You have experienced it yourself firsthand. Is this a chaotic world that we live in? Is there a real God? Why do we go through these things? Let me suggest to you a couple of possibilities. One of them is that there's a lot of building going on, but a lot of that building is fruitless. and it needs to be destroyed. And storms are great at that. They do shake us up a lot. And that shaking is necessary. I can't believe I'm here saying that. I don't want to go through it again, things that I've been going through the last handful of years. And I say that with great caution. I know that I'm speaking words that are kind of hurtful, or potentially, but I don't stand here pointing fingers. I know all too well what it's like. I'm just standing here reminding you of things that need to be said over and over again so that we can get a better idea of the whole picture. Number one, there is a lot of destruction that is necessary in our lives. Face it, we need it. Number two, it's not going to stop there. It's very easy to ignore the pain or to try to ignore it, to try to run away from it, because it's unpleasant. But wait a minute, guys. This is not where it ends. Or at least, this is not where it has to end. Okay? Hold on to that thought. Because something even better than that hope comes next. We are human beings. We are people. And we were built to listen to God. Regardless of what society tells us otherwise, we were built for God. We were built for the Lord. He made us, and He put ears in us to hear His word and to understand where He's coming from. And anybody here in this room, anybody outside of here, can listen to the Lord if they are so willing. It's not going to happen otherwise, though. But what if you do listen to the Lord? And the rains come, and the storms devastate your life. What if, just what if, you stick to the Lord no matter what, regardless of what mess is going on in your life? Some mess that maybe you started yourself, or someone else inflicted on you, or you have even no idea where it came from. What if? Do you know what God promises? And it's right here in these verses. Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like the wise man who, builds his house on the rock. What that verse says right there is that He is promising us something. Something intangible, it seems. Perhaps something very valuable. What it says is, what He says there is that if you stick with Him, if you rely on Him, His promise is that He will see you through. And He will prove you. He will prove you faithful. Now, here's what I'm saying. We live through hard times. We can give up on God. Or we can say, well, I don't know what's going on, and bury our head in the sand. Or we can listen to God and walk through it in faith with Him holding us. Cry out to Him. It works. It helps. He may not take your feet out of the fire at that moment. But I guarantee you this, you will see Him in the fire with you. And I guarantee you this, if you stay with Him, He will prove you. Prove you what? Prove you right? He will prove you faithful? It will end. The destruction cannot go on forever. Do you know why? That's the definition of hell. Where the destruction never ceases. We are not in hell, folks. Not yet. We're not in heaven either. But we're in God's presence. He promised us heaven. He promised us a lot more than heaven. He promised us life on this earth. Think about this image of building the house. Does he build the house in heaven, in the clouds? Or does he build that house here on earth? Does he build it on some spiritual foundation that feels good and is nice and can be found in the self-help section of a bookstore? Or does he build it on rock? Do you know what he's been doing here all along in the Sermon on the Mount? He's gone back to Genesis. He is recreating the world. He comes forth into the world. He breaks in to this home of Satan that was never meant to be Satan's home. And he breaks through with his message of life and peace and joy and purpose. Basically, he is saying, this world, this earth is mine, and I have come home to reclaim it. And I am looking for workers who will build it with me. Are we standing around in the 11th hour with nothing to do? Has he come to us yet and asked us, why are you standing there doing nothing? I don't know about you, but I'm really good at evading things. And I think I will hear about it for the rest of my time here at this church. Because people will say, remember that time that you said you're really good at evading stuff? Well, you know, I got this thing for you to do. Okay. That's likely to happen. Hold me to the fire, okay? The point is, we all need to get moving. Every single one of us. We're not to stand at the marketplace hanging around at the 11th hour like if there were nothing to be done. Because after all, it's all done, right? Jesus came, he lived, he died, he resurrected, which means what? We can get to go to heaven. And we don't even have to pay the price for it. It's a free ticket, guys. Off we go. Who needs to live here anyway? This nasty place. You know what that is? That's Gnosticism all over again. That's what John railed against. That's what Paul hated. Who needs this earth? Let it burn. And let the heathen burn with it. We don't need to be here. We are going home, babe. That is godless talk. In fact, Jesus cares deeply about this earth. He cares so much about it that you will not see this in any religion in the world. You will only see it in his own words. He's a God of love who comes down to the sinful world to save you and me. You will not find it in any religion in the world. Read the scriptures from other religions. Scour them. Find out what it speaks of. Being good, doing good to people, this and that, spinning the wheel a million times so that maybe someday you can get reincarnated and try all over again because you messed up the last time. You will not find a God who comes to this earth to rescue mankind anywhere except in our Lord. Number two, it doesn't just stop there. He's not here to pick you up and take you to a better place, and that's all there is to it. He's here to restore this whole earth. I'm talking about dirt, folks. The whole earth. we have allowed the environmental movement to have one over us. You know why? Because while they were out there tree-hugging and worshiping a bunch of gods, we thought that it didn't matter. Who cares about this world? Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying every one of us acted that way, or every one of us thought that way always. What I am saying is that enough of us thought enough that way for long enough that we allowed the world to run off in every single direction about saving this and doing that and thinking this and making that happen, when all along we have the Creator of the universe speaking to us about how we are to live, how we are to care for one another, how we are to care for this earth, how we are to be stewards, not abusers, how we are to raise families, not look for the day that they're 18 so we can boot them out, how we are to just sit on our butts and do nothing until heaven comes. Jesus doesn't want that. He makes it very clear that his earth is his. And the one that he is booting out is the usurper, Satan, who had no place to be here to begin with. This is his earth. And we are to work together to make things happen here. His kingdom will not come by our working. Okay? Don't get me wrong about that. This is not social gospel all over again. But his kingdom will come through us, through our working, at least in part. He calls all of us to play a role in that. And there are many ways to do that. There isn't one single way. The only thing that is clear, that is true, is that we have to follow and build on the rock. That is what is singularly true. What is that rock? It can be looked at in slightly different ways, but it all amounts to the same thing. That rock, number one, is Jesus. That rock, number two, is obedience to his word. It cannot be done otherwise. And he calls us. He says, I gave you this earth. This is yours. It is yours to do with it, not what you will. That's the part about building on sand and everything crashing down. I give it to you to do with it as I have asked you to, through obedience to my word. And that is the second version. That's the good one. There is no third choice. It's his universe. He runs the show. Are we with the play or are we not? At the end of his words in this section, there is what you may call a big pause and a huge silence. And everybody is amazed at how he speaks because of this authority that he has, how he basically steps up, claims his authority, and he says, this is how it is, and are you with me or not? There is this big silence. I don't know a whole lot about theater and acting and so on and so forth, but what I can imagine happening right now, what I see, and you know, you would probably be able to tell me a lot better, there's probably a word for this, but what I picture in my mind is suddenly the silence means that an act has ended and another one is about to start and the actors better get in place and make things happen. This is our cue to come in. And as a matter of fact, the scriptures do provide that cue. If you read a little further, you will see the man with leprosy, where it says, When he came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." And what did Jesus say? "You're on your own. Back off from me, you leper. I don't want to get hit with your disease." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. Touched. Do you hear that? Touched. Don't miss that. We're used to touching each other. Does anybody have a serious communicable disease here? Leprosy is one. He reached out and touched the man. And what did he say to him? "I am willing. Be clean." And immediately it was all gone. Even when the silence comes and the actors are to find their way to stage and do their performance, the actors still need a cue. Here's a cue right here. This man came forth. Why does he have leprosy? Who knows? It doesn't say. It could have been something that he did that he shouldn't have. It may have been a sinful act on his part that got him in that situation. It may have been plain ignorance. It may have been absolutely no fault of his own. But he got stuck with it. And you know what came with it? Isolation. Despair. Self-loathing. Worries, trouble, not being able to work, being shunned by society, not even being able to feel someone's touch. Unless maybe there was a compassionate leper who understood enough and tried to impart some human reaction. Do you know what it is not to be touched? Can you imagine how he must have felt when Jesus touched him? Can you imagine how he must have felt when he saw the disease disappear? Are we willing, folks? Are we willing? I think that a lot of times we are not, in part because we're worried about the cost. Remember the song that we just sang a little bit ago about asking God to open the gates of his kingdom in our hearts and so on? I don't remember if that's exactly how the words went, but that is sort of the gist. It comes with a price. You don't have to pay the unpayable price of sin. That's already been paid for everybody in the world, including those who don't believe and those who think that what we speak of is junk and nonsense and, you know, just basically garbage. It has been paid for everyone. It's not available to everyone. It's only available to those who respond to it. Hey, it's a gift. You have to open the package. You do have to say thank you. Courtesy still rules in this uncourteous world. And that's because God still rules. He's not going to overrule you in your little kingdom. But he will break through. And when he does, which will be when you ask, that will come with a price. It will come with a price that every single one of us can pay because he makes it possible. But it will come at a price. You may have to reorder your life in a way different from what you intended. You may have to do without certain dreams that you had. I can guarantee you, based on a little bit of experience that I have had based on words that I have heard other people say, and based on the Master's own words, whatever you give up will be given to you 100-fold over. It is true, folks. If you haven't experienced that yet, let go and you'll see it happen. If you have experienced that, speak of it and encourage others. That is how we break the silence, by stepping in and saying, Lord, if you are willing. And I guarantee you, His words are not false. Sometimes they're hard to listen to because, remember the crashing? There is a lot of crashing that has to happen before we start to listen, before we can begin to build according to His ways. And if we start that process, guess what? Genesis 11 happens all over again, but in reverse, so to speak. What I mean by that is, God will come down to His kingdom and say, if they are of one mind and heart and are obeying me, then nothing that they put their minds to will be impossible for them. Isn't that amazing? Nothing that they put their minds and their hearts to will be impossible for them. We live in this real world, and we, because of experience and everything that we go through, we are used to thinking, yeah, sure, right. I remember this and this and this. I know that in my life myself. I'm sure I don't have to remind you. You don't have to remind me. Despite that, God says, if you are of one heart and mind with me, what you put yourself to will not be impossible. He is the master of this universe. He is the master builder. He's the master architect. To every extent that we're able to understand that and really open our hearts to live it, to every extent that we can do that, we will find ourselves in more and more positions to be able to let go of this string and that rope and this limb and that sand, and actually free our hands so that we can build on the rock. It is a guarantee that He provides. So, I don't know how long I've gone on, but I think maybe now is time to close. What I ask you to do is consider these words of His, this long sermon as Matthew put it together. Remember that He is recreating the whole world here. Just as He created the universe at the beginning and He provided the garden. So He's recreating the universe now. And do not be surprised that what you read sounds impossible. Because it is. It is impossible without Him. And it is not possible for us to accomplish this on our own. But if we do not make the mistake that Adam and Eve made back in Genesis and go our own way thinking about, hey, wouldn't it be great if I build this thing, and wouldn't that be wonderful, and what about, you know, fame and fortune and make a name for myself, right? What if we don't go that route, and this time we do listen to Him and we obey what He is saying through this whole process? Then we will be able to see the very things that the people in Genesis were hoping for. We will be able to see them delivered. Because God is not giving up on this earth. He is bringing His kingdom to this earth. Will things get worse than they are? Yes. I am not trying to blind you to what Revelation speaks of. Things will get worse, folks. Far, far worse. Maybe not in your lifetime. Maybe not in your grandchildren's lifetime. Who knows when it's coming? But the rains will come. The storms will come. And just about everything in this world will come crashing down. But His words will not. And He means to come here to this earth, not to pull people out of it, but to renew it. And He means for us to play a role in that renewal and to stand where He asks us to stand, even though He knows that many will reject what we have to say and even abuse us. He does not paint a pretty picture of what will happen down the road. But Revelation doesn't stop there either. Revelation is about the final takeover of this earth, the final takeover of the whole universe by God. That is His promise. The going is rough, but His words are love, joy, peace, here, now. Not just in the future. Now, this very day, if you feel strong because of that, then I ask you to encourage others. If you do not feel strong, if you feel trapped, do not keep it to yourself. The Lord did not mean for any one of us to suffer alone. He meant for every single one of us, when we find ourselves in trouble, to seek out a brother. There are brothers here. I will mention one. I will mention one as a family. If you ever need encouragement, if you ever need direction, and it would help to speak to somebody, all you have to do is look around you and find a Rittinger family and see what God does in their lives. Yes, I can say that. I can say that. And I can say that of other families here too. I will only say that of you today. I'm told that you will have to suffer through a number of messages of mine down the road. And so as a little bit of candy, I will speak of other people as well. But if any of you has doubts, go talk to them. See how they order their lives. Think about that. God may call you to order your life differently from them. I'm not suggesting, hey, if I only do what Bill does, all my finances will be in order. Right? If I did what he did, I'd probably be in better shape. But in any case, they are an example to us. And I can say that because it doesn't come from them. It comes from the Lord, and it comes from me observing how they live. There are other people here that are likewise. If anyone is in trouble, please do not suffer alone. Bring it to someone who loves you. And you will see God at work in your life. We are to build this together, folks. Not alone, and not on the clouds, here on earth, right now. Let us pray. Father, your words are very powerful because you come into our earth, you break through into our world right where we are. You do not speak of pie in the sky, and all sorts of nonsense like our detractors speak of constantly. If they only took a moment to listen to your words. But perhaps in order for that to happen, we need to take a moment and listen to your words and put them in action, knowing fully well that we cannot accomplish them. And we must remember that though we cannot accomplish them, it does not give us an excuse to then think of them as something for the future that doesn't apply today. But may that impossibility bring us on our knees to you, the God of all possibility, to live godly lives before you, to bring forth the word, to preach, to bring good news, to bring hope to this hurting and suffering world. May we all proclaim your kingdom, Lord, here on earth, and advance it according to your holy name. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.